Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This is the Hometown Roofing Pomp and Pony Podcast, presented by Hometown Roofing. Put your trust in us and powered by Bowser Chevrolet. Here's Bob Pompieni from KDKA-TV and Andrew Filipponi from 93.7 The Fan.
We're very happy on this week's Pomp and Pony Podcast to have a member of the local community who's made it big, Rocco Mediate.
Just like you, Bob.
Yeah, and so here we have Pompieni, Mediate,
define
and Filipponi
big,
all on the same show.
Yeah. It's a subjective term, Rocco. Believe me.
Yeah, define big. You mean like fat? What do you mean?
Yeah, well, fat. I just had a BMI test. I know I'm fat. Okay. I got to get on that Rocco Mediate diet.
Right.
Bob just had a sandwich about as big as his head before we taped this thing, Rocco. So
I wish I could, too.
Yeah. Yeah. So, hey, listen, this is when this airs, it's going to be Masters Week. And I know you have a lot of experience with Masters and Augusta National. First off, I just want to talk from a golfer's perspective, your perspective. You've been in the lead down there at the Masters and just what it's like to have it and how difficult it is to play with it if you're lucky enough to get it.
Well, to get it, yeah, it's insane what you have to do there and the control. It's just such a precise place. It's a big, big, big golf course, and if you miss in certain spots, the game's over. I mean, you could literally put somebody on 18 greens, and it'd be tough to two-putt any of them unless you make some kind of crazy 20-footer after. You know what I mean? It's like, it's you know, we could two-putt, but, I mean, you could literally three-putt 18 times if you're in the wrong place, which is really weird to even think about, but it's true. And then if you miss the green in the wrong spot 18 times, for instance, you have no chance to get up and down. So it's a very precise place with the speeds of those greens and the tilt and the up and down in the fairways. And it's just a heck of a place. I mean, it's not like Jones designed it anymore, but it's still Augusta National. So,
Rocco, how would you get yourself psyched up or prepared to play the Masters every year? What were the weeks before, the days before that tournament like for you?
It was just the same. You know, growing up in Western PA, our green speeds were always as fast. You know, Augusta National on the flats were like 12, you know, stint at around 12-ish on the flat. Okay, which is really fast. And then when you put slope in it, then it becomes astronomical. But, you know, growing up at Greensburg, playing at Oakmont a few times I did, playing at all the courses up there, we had that. We had tilt and slope and crazy things, and that was just normal to us. So that never really affected us. I mean, when I'd practice, when I lived in Naples before, some of the Masters that I played good at, I practiced at Calusa Pines. Our green speeds on the flat were 13, 14. So when I went to Augusta, it wasn't as fast. So it became easier to putt there and knowing the slope. But, man, it's just you can look so silly with a misread there because it goes off the planet. So, you know, the guys that play great there, you have to be the best putter, period. You have to be the best putter that week. I don't care what anybody says. If you're not, you got no chance to win. None.
You also have to play that number 12 hole. And Andrew, I don't know, but Rocco, like I said, had a lead. Number 12 killed guys when Tiger won his last Masters.
Well, I mean, if you make a 10 on number 12, it's just not a good thing.
He made
a 10
on.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, but, I mean, it can happen to anyone.
Exactly. But, I mean, just your score is kind of done after that. But it's just – but every hole out there – you have an opportunity to do something really bad if you're offline or here or there. You know what I mean? 12 is obviously a bit brutal because there's just nowhere to play after you mess up the first one. Really hard to play there. But and that's what it should be. I mean, I like it when it's impossible or hard. You know, the wind gets to blowing 20 miles an hour there. I don't know what you see it. Mm-hmm. Things happen that you can't even imagine happen from the best players on earth. So it's just hard.
Rocco, do you feel, I mean, you're playing, you know, world-class golf courses and the biggest events, but do you feel like the prestige and like the sanctity of Augusta National in the event when you're actually playing in it? I mean, CBS tries to play that. I'm watching on my couch. They try to make such a big deal of that. But when you're on the course and playing in the Masters, do you actually feel that, Rocco?
Well, you feel a difference, yes.
Yep.
But it's the 7-iron still goes 150 yards at Augusta National for most people. For like, I was always taught that. Jackie Burke would say, before my first Masters, I was in Houston talking with him, and he goes, you know, son, there's no green jackets hanging from the trees, and a 7-iron still goes 150. So you got to look at it that way. It's just golf,
yep.
But it's pretty special golf. All the majors are majors. They're the most special events we play. So, but, you know, people say, well, I'm going to play the U.S. Open, and I'm going to treat it like a normal tournament. Well, you're not. Because when you see the Augusta National emblem on the flags, play on, and you have the best fields. So, you know, they want to define the best player that week, and they don't care how they define it. Same with, you know, the USGA. I always liked the way they did it because guys would bitch and moan like it was ridiculous. I'm like, wait a minute, it's supposed to be impossible. Pars are supposed to be good.
Yeah.
What happened to that? And in Augusta, it's different sometimes. Sometimes the scores are low. Sometimes they're not. If the wind gets up, the greens are firm, forget it. It's hard to shoot any score there. So I always liked majors because most of the guys were done, not most, but a lot of the guys were done before they started. And this course is unfair. The greens are too fast. The pins were terrible. Well, good. I hope that's what they feel like. But it defines, you know, Lee Jansen, one of my dearest friends, won 2 U.S. Opens.
Yeah.
And him and I would always laugh about, we won it, not that we were any, well, Lee is, but not that I was any elite player, but my point, I wanted it to be impossible because I could hit my ball a lot of times where I was looking, and especially in the fairways. And Augusta, believe it or not, is, you know, they say, well, you can drive anywhere there. Well, you really can't. You never really could. Just because there's not 6-inch rough doesn't mean you can't, you know, it's because the angles at Augusta National are huge, huge. You could be 10 yards right of the guy and the other guy's 10 yards left of you, and he's got you beat already before you hit your second shot because you can't get the ball close to the hole on certain angles. It's impossible.
So how does a guy like DeChambeau?
So far now that with that, yeah, well, see, the thing about Bryson is if he's driving straight, you know, up there, huge advantage. DJ, when Tiger was in his heyday, huge advantage. The longer they made the golf course, the easier it was for them.
Mm-hmm.
See, that you know, they say, we're going to Tiger-proof it. No, you're going to Tiger make it easier. Because he's going to, you know, the longest guys are still the longest guys. If Bryson has control of his ball off the tee, tough to beat. If DJ has control, which he just showed you last year, if he has control of his ball off the tee, forget it. He's going to be out driving everybody and have way shorter clubs. No matter how good I am with a 6-iron, I'm not going to beat their 9-iron. Maybe here and there, but no.
Exactly.
For a week, I'll get decimated. And that's what the long guys just – no, I'm not comparing myself. You know what I mean? DJ's out driving a guy he's playing against 25 yards in the fairway. He's going to murder him because especially into those greens. Anybody. But if Bryson has control, you know, last year he didn't have control and he didn't shoot a very good scores. But if he does drive straight, he's going to have an advantage because he's hitting way shorter clubs than everybody else. Anybody that does that is going to, you know, you look at all the guys. You look at JT. I say JT like I know him, but you look at Justin Thomas. If he's driving his ball straight, big advantage, huge advantage.
Rocco, I don't know if I've ever heard your opinion on DeChambeau and the way he looks at golf and training for it and his methodology and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really cool because if you think about every sport, and I've talked about it, and so has a lot of other people, what sport in the world has the athlete not gotten bigger, stronger, and faster? All of them. Well, when this came into golf, people are going, what the hell is going on here? He's carrying it 330 yards. Well, it was going to happen. You can talk about equipment all you want. It's not making it go 330. What he's doing, you know, obviously it helps, you know, compared to 30 years ago. But if it was 30 years ago and he did that, he'd be driving it 30 by everybody else anyway. You see what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the longest guys are the longest guys no matter what equipment's in their hands. If you put us all back to persimmon, Bryson will still be the longest guy out there. It's simple as that. So what he's done to do it is remarkable. And then he's played with it. And he won a major championship missing every fairway at Wingfoot.
Yeah.
So how do you protect, how do you stop it? You know, when I heard, when they were going to Wingfoot last year, they were talking about Bryson, and I'm like, well, no. I mean, if he doesn't drive into fairways, I mean, on men's day at Wingfoot on a Thursday morning with the guys playing out there, and you drive it where he did, you can't break 80 on men's day. It's not in the U.S. Open. So I tell people that ask me that question, let's just pretend that I was in that U.S. Open at 58 years old. Well, 57 last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you put me in Bryson's place. I got to hit from where he did every day. Same thing. I got to do that. Didn't have to drive the ball. I got to put it where he was. I would have had to bust my ass to break 80 all four of those days.
Wow.
To break 80. Not to shoot in the 60s two or three of those days and shoot 6 under par. See, so there's a strength. So if he's got 150 yards out of the rough, he's hitting some kind of sand wedge or mid wedge, I'm standing back with an 8-iron going, I got no friggin' chance to hit this shot in the green. So I better be chipping my ass off, and I'm still not going to get it up and down most of the time on those greens.
Yeah.
So what he did was remarkable. How do you stop him? How do you stop him?
Well,
it's almost impossible because he proved it there. Of any other golf course, I would have got it, but not Wingfoot. And he beat the Philly Heat. You know, he won by 6. He won going away. But there is an art to playing out of rough. I never had the art because I wasn't fast enough and strong enough to hit 7-irons 185 out of the rough. It just didn't happen. Or 9-irons. It just didn't happen. See, so those guys get to play good when most of the guys don't because of its strength. Bryson's so strong, it's stupid. But he really knows. One thing about Bryson, I've only spoken to him once. One thing about Bryson is he knows what he's doing. He's the physics part. People make, he's physics. Well, yeah, golf is physics. To make the ball do certain things, that physical thing must happen. Club must be in a certain spot. Well, he gets that. And what he does is pretty good. His golf swing's really good. He's faster than hell. And he's learning his wedges now. You know, DJ figured out wedges. Look what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Number one player in the world, two majors, 21 and 22 tournament wins. It's ridiculous. Because if I was John Daly, back when John Daly was John Daly, I'd have become the greatest wedge player on the face of the earth and beat everyone to death every other week.
Yeah.
Because I'm driving 50 yards by everybody.
Yeah.
Huge advantage. So,
but I like what he did. Now, will it last? You know, we don't know what the body doesn't like the stuff that these kids are doing to it. Trust me. The body does not like it. And hopefully it won't break, but it's just so much torque on those joints.
That's kind of like what happened to Tiger, spine. Isn't it, Rocco? I mean, isn't that kind of what happened to him?
100%. Golf swing caused it. Not that it was a bad golf swing. But the way he made the club go so fast back then put stress on parts of the lumbar spine that didn't like it, and it blew many times. You know, who's amazing and who doesn't have many injuries is DJ. He does a lot of interesting things to make the club ball go where he's looking, and the body is just twisted all up, but it's genius. You know, Freddie Couples was his back was a mess his whole career because of his golf swing. Not because it was a bad golf swing. It was just... It took its toll on the body. Even a perfect golf swing, if you could say there is one, the easiest on the joints will still mess things up because it's a screwy motion that we do.
Mm-hmm.
Standing sideways, bent over with a crooked stick, trying to make a ball go where we're looking. Best wishes. It's crazy, but if you look at all the injuries that are out there, it's not a coincidence. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. But hopefully it doesn't for a long, long time because it's so much fun watching these guys play. But to make that club go fast like they do, the body has to do really weird things. Weird things.
It's the Hometown Roofing Pop and Pony podcast powered by Bowser Chevrolet.
You talked about fun to watch. I found it amazing to watch when you took Tiger on head-to-head in 2008 out of Torrey Pines, and you forced him to a sudden-death 18-hole and then another extra time after that, and you were in position to win that thing on 18. He's dealing with all his injuries. He can hardly walk, all this crap.
Oh, yeah.
And he had to make a putt on 18 to force this playoff. And I'm curious what your reaction was, because most people would have thought at that point that you had it won. There's no way he's going to make, what was it, like a 20-foot downhill putt.
No, not with him there. No way. I had a putt on the 71st hole that day. I hit a 7-iron to about, 10 feet behind the hole. Really pretty. I couldn't believe it because I didn't remember the – you're so – I don't know what the word is, but I don't even remember swinging. You know, And I hit this shot in behind the hole about, like I said, about 10 feet, give or take. I'm not even exactly sure, but a little downhill sliding towards the water, towards the ocean. And I remember walking up there telling Matt, because I couldn't reach 18. So I had to hit some kind of crazy low. I always tried to hit low hooks off 18 so I could run it up there. Then I reached it one day doing that. Well, the next four times I played it, I overdid it because if I hit a pretty nice tee shot on 18, I have to lay up anyway. So I had to hit this crazy anyway. So I had this putt on the 71st hole, and I told Matthew, my caddy, I said, Matthew, when this goes in, this thing's over. Because if I got two up with two to play, I think I got him. And I just gave it a roll too much pace and caught the high side and went by about 3 or 4 feet anyway. Shook that one in somehow. But my point is, I knew if I didn't birdie one of the last two holes, there was going to be a problem. Mm. And even that putt he had, there was no doubt that we were playing Monday.
No doubt.
Because you have to know, because it was him. Mm. Now, no disrespect, call it what you want, but if anybody else had that putt, I'm not even concerned.
Wow.
I don't care who it was. Because it was him. So I expected that to go in. I don't care what the green was doing. I didn't care about all that stuff. It was him. And that was kind of his heyday, pretty much.
Yeah.
So he, you know, could he have missed it? Well, of course he could have. Anybody could have. But you got to give him a. I mean, I'm standing back there going, well, he's making this. We're going to Monday, so I was ready to go.
So that playoff, that was the first day, Rocco, that I actually, that was my first day, started a job in radio. I'm 22 years old. That playoff against Torrey Pines, that's the first day I ever worked in my entire life in radio when I got a real paycheck. And I'm watching you against him that day. You're crazy. And I'm watching you that day, and I'm thinking to myself watching you, what was the dynamic like on the course? It's just the two of you. You don't have to watch a leaderboard. You know, usually when guys play together, I would think there's at least a little bit of communication between two guys while they're playing in a major chance. So I've always been fascinated and wondered what it was like on the course with him that day.
It was normal. You know, it was. I always talk. He doesn't talk much, but we talked a bunch. We laughed a lot. Because I kept looking at him going, what the hell are you doing? Making putts here, getting it up and down, stuff. I know he's going to do that. Nothing he did ever surprised me. It might have surprised other people, and I was like, "Yeah, that's normal for him." But no, it was a normal day, you know. As far as you know, we obviously were both trying to beat the crap out of each other, and it was just one of those. It was so much fun; I couldn't stand it. It was so much fun. You know, I was disappointed I lost, but I was also disappointed that the playoff didn't last 12 days. It was so much fun to play golf out there in front of all these people and. You know, and just, you know, everyone expected a car wreck. I did not expect a car wreck. I knew when I woke up that morning that I was going to win this golf tournament because I had him through the air big time. I had complete control. You know, I shouldn't say complete. Very much control of my golf ball that week because I hit more greens and more fairways than I think the field. So that's why I knew when I got up Monday that the only one that was going to stop me was me. Because there's nothing he could do to stop me to do what I wanted to do. Just because I'm playing with him, and I play them a lot. And I love playing with Tiger. I love all the noise. I love chaos. So I loved all that craziness, and it was crazy. There were 25,000 people. It was two guys.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was noisy. It was noisy, very noisy. But that never affected me. Like, some guys are affected by all that. I didn't give a shit what noise was there. I didn't care where the people were going.
Was this a pro-Tiger crowd, or were they looking at you like, okay, here comes David taking on Goliath?
Yeah. At first, during the day, during the early, I handed them 9 and 10 right in a platter. You know, I three-putted 9 from 20 feet above the hole, and I didn't get up and down on 10 from 5 yards short of the green. Hit a pretty 8-iron, just caught up in the wind, end up short. He made a 25-footer for par on 10. I missed the 4-foot. I hit a terrible chip. So I'm 3 down with 8 to play, and everyone's kind of probably, you know, laughing. And I wasn't, though, because when I got to 11-tee, I told Matthew, I went, listen, if I do what I know I can do these last 8 holes, this son of a bitch is not beating me. I was so mad at what I did because I handed it to him on 8 and 9. Just here, take these because you're not good enough to. Yeah, I handed the best player in the world two shots. Here, just take those. And when we got to 16T, I was one ahead. And it was exactly where I wanted to be. And it was crazy. But it didn't surprise. I wasn't surprised. I was like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing here. This isn't like, whoa, you're playing out of your ass. I wasn't. Mm-hmm. I just was playing normal golf, tee to green, fairways and greens, fairways and greens, fairways and greens. And then, that's just how I felt about it all day. And it just didn't happen to turn out, but it was sure fun trying. I can tell you that. I'd love to do it. It would have been fun to do it every weekend with him because it's just too much. It's just too cool.
You mentioned that he was in his heyday then, and he was. You know, that this you took on prime Tiger that day, that tournament. You say that, Rocco, because just the mental strength that he had back then, just like you mentioned the putt that you knew was going to go in. Just because he was so confident in himself, and do you think, you know, guys go up and down confidence wise? Professional athletes do. Like, do you think that Tiger Woods still has that confidence that you spoke of there that day?
Well, he doesn't only because his body failed him. His ability didn't fail him. Yeah, he screwed around his golf swing with the wrong guys for years, destroyed him, completely wrong guys. Just decimated this kid. It's a fact. I don't care what anybody says. It's a fact. I watched it happen right in front of my eyes. So I don't. The confidence is not there physically. Mm. If he got the physical confidence back, which he did a couple of years ago, he won that other big tournament in Augusta we're talking about.
Yep.
Okay. Didn't surprise me in the least. Surprised me. It took so long to get number 15. It took 10 years or 11 years to get 18.
Yep.
I mean to get the 15th. That's what surprised me. So, no, he doesn't have the physical confidence by any stretch as he had the physical. He can't because the body's failed. Then this happened to him a few months ago, which is, you know, that who knows how bad that is. We don't know. But if anybody could figure out how to come back from it, he will. As long as he can have a semi-normal physical life, even if it has no golf involved, that'd be great because he has children. And he wants to be, he's only 45 or 6 years old, so... You know, it'd be nice that he'd be able to walk normal. You know, who knows what happened to him. But as far as the golf's concerned, you know, if this wouldn't have happened, he's starting to get the physical confidence back. You know, he won his 83rd in Japan a couple of years ago. And it just looked like he was 25 years old when he's out there playing. So that's what he's lost, the physical confidence, because there's no physical – his body has failed him. Failed is a bad word, but the body doesn't work like it used to because it's broken.
Right.
You know, broke.
The other thing that you had a great opportunity, and I'm sure close to your heart, is playing with Arnold Palmer in his last opportunity at Oakmont, which was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in my life, especially carrying into the press room.
And it was like 100 degrees that day. Wasn't it just sweltering heat, too?
Yeah, but, I mean, Arnold and Rocco playing together.
It was bad.
But had to be one of the greatest highlights of your career, I would imagine.
Yeah, it was the most special 2 days, for sure. And I played a ton of golf with him over the years and spent a lot of time with him over the years, lots of time. But that was cool because the USGA asked me because I was exempt for the Open, but I was hurt. I wasn't playing in early 94. And I had the back surgery about a month after that Open. And they asked me, I said, well, you know, we're going to pair you with Mr. Palmer in his last event. And I'd played one event that year. And I went, yeah, I'll play. I'll crawl around and play. So I remember going there, and I played Westchester the week before, somehow made the cut, got some golf in, and came to Oakmont and felt pretty good. You know, I felt pretty good. And I played pretty good for the first 36 holes. I was in a decent position playing with him. It was just so much fun. But coming up, the 36th hole was, you'll never forget that. And just the things that were said and, you know, standing back, Mahaffey and I and Wormy, who caddy for me, one of my dearest friends, he's caddying for me for those years. We stood back and just watched. You don't get to see that. And when we got in the green and we were walking off the green, I said, this is all because of you. And that's when he kind of lost it.
Wow.
I take complete credit for that. because it was. You know, he the world stopped and watched because they should have. The respect is deserved. And the respect was given. You could see it in the press room. It was just devastating to him that he had to be done with his favorite event that he should have won 3 or 4 times instead of just once. You know, but it was his favorite event. Obviously, Augusta, too, but you know what I mean. And so having that opportunity was very, are you kidding me? I was the luckiest person in the world.
Man, that's one of the craziest sports days. That's one of the craziest days, period, because that's the O.J. Simpson Ford Bronco day, too, if my memory's right.
That night, we were watching that thing.
I think it was. And,
unbelievable.
And it's like, you know, we know Ernie won, but we don't really remember the Ernie won.
Man.
So, we don't remember Ernie made about a four-footer to win on the 11th hole in the playoffs. So it's crazy. Yeah, it's but, yeah, that was just special. I you know, any time I got to spend with him was cool and special, but that was silly how fun that was.
And you and Arnold Palmer have that in common, Rocco, that you're both guys from Western Pennsylvania that, you know, made it to the point where you're the top 0.1%.
Yeah, it's a small fraternity.
Yeah, with that in mind, I mean, there are people that are going to listen to this podcast that play casual golf, or maybe they have kids that they're trying to, you know, turn them into the next Rocco Mediator Arnold Palmer.
Right.
What would you say to people? How do you aspire and then become a great golfer when you're from this part of the country?
You know, he didn't start till he was 15 years old.
Well, even better.
Yeah, I started, but growing up there, growing up there is a bonus because the golf courses, they're you know, learning where I learned at Greensburg and Hannistown some and Mount Odin, even Mount Odin, up and down side hills, fast greens, and just, you know, back then we're hitting 3 irons into a lot of holes. Now we're hitting 9 irons. You know, things have changed, but learning there was huge and good teaching. You know, Jim Faree started teaching me in 1980. He was at Westmoreland. You know, learning to play that, you know, playing there with him a lot, watching the best. You know, Jim was as good a ball striker as I've ever seen to this day when he was 50. So I got to learn from, and I was always decent hitting a ball with a stick. I mean, so I got good at it. I never aspired to be a professional, though. Hmm. I played college golf, and I went and tried tour school just so I wouldn't go back 10 years ago. I wonder if I was ever good enough to make it out there. And that's 36 years ago now, or 35 years ago. But so, how is it? Like, I'm helping. I shouldn't say. I'm working with, helping, talking with the kid from Greensburg, Mark Goetz.
Yes.
Just remember that name.
I know.
There's something about that, our area. I don't know what it is. But this kid's got the look. He's got the heart. He's got the balls to play professional golf. Now it's just up to him to go use them the right way. Still an amateur. He's at West Virginia. But really wonderful kid. But he has that mentality of the FU mentality. Okay, that's what you got to have.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of good players out there. A lot of guys hit it 300 yards. Who cares? What do you do with the arsenal? It's like I tell Getzy, I'm like, you have an arsenal unlike a lot of people I've ever seen. 130-mile-an-hour club speed, all that crap, right? But if you don't know how to use the arsenal, it's completely worthless to you. How do we use these weapons? So a lot of people come to me and they'll say, some kids or the family comes to me and go, what do you think about my son? He does this and that. I said, I don't know what kind of heart he's got. I have no idea. And the only way you find that out is when you put the heart on the line. You know, when you got to go qualify or you got to play this to get in your, to do this and to do that. You just don't know. You just, until you do it. There's so many great players in the world right now. It's unbelievable. I grew up with a lot of kids at home that were way better than me. A lot of kids in college were way better than me. Jansen was way better than me. It took him 5 years to get on tour. Okay, I got out there. I shouldn't have got out there. I got out there so fast. I was 21 years old. So I don't know. But what do you have inside you that says, I can do this when it really counts? That's the key. And then that just keeps going up as a level as a player you become, college, amateur golf, big-time amateur golf, professional golf. It's just how it is. I mean, if you look at some of the kids that played great at amateur golf, they're not out there. Some of them. Not all of them, but some of them. You know, the no-miss, the can't-miss guys, some of those guys did miss.
Yeah.
And it's hard to explain why. It's hard to explain why. It's just so hard of a – it's insane. It's like my wife says, Jess says, I don't know what you are. You've done this for 36 years. Who does that?
And you're still doing it.
I'm still doing it. And it's kind of what? It's insane how we were programmed. You know, I don't know. You know, I was always pushed. My dad pushed me, but in a good way. My dad wasn't like, you know, he just made me work. If you're going to do it, basically. My college coach, Coach Matlock, you don't work hard enough, son. And we worked like every day till dark. you're lazy. You know, what do you mean I'm lazy? And then you work harder. You know, a lot of guys don't like to hear that. You know, it's different now. You know, Mr. Palmer busted my ass. I came back after I won Greensboro in 93, my second win. Beat Elk in a playoff. I'm up at Laurel that Monday doing an outing for him, for the hospital. Doc comes out, Giffen comes out, and he goes, hey, the boss wants you to come to his office after you're done playing. I said, oh, good. He's going to tell me how great I am. I just won a tournament yesterday, blah, 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 blah. This is going to be great. I get to the office, I sit down, and he goes, so, no congratulations yet, nothing. In fact, I don't even think he congratulated me. It was hilarious. He goes, so I see you backed yourself into one yesterday. So now I'm mad. I go, what do you mean I backed into one? I posted a score. Elk made a 10-footer in the last to get in the playoff, and I beat him on the fourth hole. What do you mean backed it? Well, you should have won that outright. See what I mean?
Yeah.
He was that guy.
Yeah.
He went after it, but it was in a good way. He was tough. He was like, you shouldn't have to mess with that playoff. You shouldn't have done this. I'm like, well, I did, though. I didn't want to mention Olympic to him. I didn't do that to him. I didn't go after him because, but we got into some drag outs because he was just, he wanted more. And I enjoyed that push. It pissed me off in a good way. It never made me say, what the hell is he talking about? What is he, you know, I'm like, all right, I'll give it more. And, you know, I did fine. Obviously, I wasn't going to do what he did. Who is? So, you know, but he did like the way I treated and acted with people. You know, most of the time, we all make mistakes. But he did like that because he taught me that. You know, it's like you give something back to the game, son. Mm. He would say this, if someone's dumb enough to come out and watch you play, you better give them something back for their money. Hello, how you doing? I don't care where you are in the tournament. And I did. At first, I couldn't because you got to look people in the eye. Well, I couldn't do that either. I was too shy. That's changed, obviously. But it was hard to look people in the eye when you talk to them. You know, it's back then when I first started, I was like a fish out of water for my first few years. I didn't know what the hell was going on. But I learned more about being than playing from him. And that, you know, it's just people come out for a reason. It's not, you treat them with respect. And I tried to do that I did that most of the time, I think.
Yeah, I know you did.
I enjoyed that part. We had a lot of talks. We had a lot of talks about things. And and he was great. Believe me, he was. And, you know, towards the end, we spent some time before he went somewhere else. And he was just really cool about, you know, I'm so proud of you, how you handled yourself. And, you know, you had a nice career. And, you know, you could have won a couple Opens. I could have won a couple. He goes, it's just hard. He goes, you gave it. I just like the way you fought. And that's, you know, you learn that. He was always in my back pocket or on my shoulder when I played, especially in big-time events, because I knew he was watching.
Mm-hmm. That's
he'd come out to Bay Hill and watch. Not just me, but he'd be in a car, and he'd come out and watch me play three or four holes because I'm from the same place. And I almost won his event a couple times, heartbreaking that I didn't. A couple of times, but it was just so much fun to be. I always felt like I was one up on everybody else because we're from the same place as far as he was concerned. And I knew that if I called him, he'd pick up the phone and say, what's going on? What's happening? Can I help you? Blah, blah, blah. You know, I knew that. And that's a pretty cool thing to be able to have.
Oh, yeah.
Because not many people had it.
That makes it special.
Not many people had it. And I never took, you know, I never overdid it or said anything about it. But, you know, he's Mr. Palmer to me, and he still is.
Well, listen, we'll leave you on this note. And, Andrew, I don't know if you know this, but, you know, Rocco's still playing on the Champions Tour. And not too long ago in one of the events, the Safeway event, he did something that I don't think anyone else has done. And he holed out four different times from the fairway, a hole-in-one, number one. He also had three hole-outs for what distance? I mean, I never saw anything. To your knowledge, has anyone else done that?
It was so stupid, yeah. I made a 7-iron on the fourth. So it's funny, I remember him because it doesn't happen. And that was the last time I won. I was almost 48. But I hold a 7-iron on the fourth hole on Friday, a wedge on the 15th hole on Saturday, and a wedge on the 71st hole on Sunday, and still had to make a 5-footer to win. It's the freakiest thing you've ever seen. So apparently I was supposed to win the tournament. Apparently they said, yeah, he gets to win. Because you would think you'd win by 10 doing that. But no, one, barely. Barely won by one. But yeah, those I've got to experience, I tell people this, now that I'm older and look back even more, it's like I've got to experience things that no one gets to experience. There's only a few of us, and I mean by a few of us, professional golfers on the PGA Tour. That's only a few. I got to experience things, feelings, looks, noises. I don't know how to explain it, that you just don't get. And I've been very fortunate to be able to experience that stuff a lot. And being with the best players in the world and being able to hang out with them for, you know, 35, 40, 36 years and learn from them and stuff. It's ridiculous what I've got to do. Ridiculous. And well, very, you know, I've never taken it for granted ever because it can turn on you so fast, as you guys know, and anything. It'll make your head spin. So I always respected it, and whether I was playing great for a long time or crappy for a long time, I knew it would turn one way or the other.
Well, I know this. You've been an inspiration to a lot of golfers around here, and we appreciate the time today, Rocco.
Yeah, thanks, Rock.
I look forward to seeing you. And I still want to have a match with you, and I want strokes, so we'll get that figured out.
You'll get a lot of it.
Yeah, we'll come. I'll be home. I'll be home in the summer. I'll be up there June-ish. I'll keep you posted.
All right.
thanks, Rocco.
Man. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Take care.
Yep. See
you. Too.
You've been listening to the Hometown Roofing Pomp and Pony Podcast. Hometown Roofing. Put your trust in us. And powered by Bowser Chevrolet. Join us each week for another Hometown Roofing Pomp and Pony Podcast.